Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of the Dead End Sports Podcast. This is a weekly sports podcast. This is the best couple of hours of your sports week. Thank you for tuning in. I am your host, 12 Kyle. And again, this is Dead End Sports. If you haven't done so already, make sure that you subscribe to this podcast. You can find this podcast anywhere where podcasts are given away for free. So if you want to get it on iTunes, you can go to iTunes. You can get it on SoundCloud, Stitcher. You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all Dead End Sports, all across the board. So make sure that you do that and stay engaged. Check out our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Dead End Sports. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. Of course, I will not be doing this podcast alone. Joining me are the homies. First up, my man, Beezy, 430. Beezy, what up, though?
What up, though? What's going on, Kyle?
Chilling. What's good with you?
Chilling. Still kind of getting back in the swing of things for work because I had a nice unexpected off day yesterday, which was cool. Yeah, I mean, they closed our building down. You know what I mean? They closed it down, you know, expecting quote-unquote snow flurries, but I think it was really because of the game, you know. And, you know, I work downtown, so they was shutting a lot of streets off and stuff like that. So
I heard.
I think that was the reason, but hell, I ain't complaining. Still got paid and still at the crib all day.
Yeah, I heard Ken's president was in town, so you know they had to shut the streets down so he could make his entrance. And that was a joke.
Yeah.
Also joining us is the homie Ken. Ken, what up, man?
Yo, what up?
Chilling. What's good?
Yeah, he's not my guy, man. I heard they booed him and everything.
Man, so. Not only did he get booed, but they showed him when they were singing the national anthem, and he does not know the words to the national anthem.
Wow.
So the guy who has been critical of NFL players taking a knee doesn't know the words to the national anthem. I mean, I think we all learned the national anthem in, like, I don't know, second, third grade or something, and this guy, man, I'm not. Let me stop. But yeah, he didn't know the national anthem.
Hey, that's y'all boy, man. That's what he do.
I know the black national anthem.
Oh, we know that. We know that. And the homie FIFO will be joining us momentarily. As I mentioned, man, we got a lot of stuff to talk about. Going to be football heavy. We'll get some basketball talk in as well. And, of course, we'll wrap it up with one guy to go. First, man, the wild card weekend. We just saw some good games. We saw some, you know, a great game, if you will. And we saw a terrible game as well. So let's start right there before we get into the college football talk. I'll start with you. We had four games. Tennessee went to Kansas City and got a win. And then we had the Falcons going out to L.A. and putting the beat down on the Rams. Then we saw Buffalo and Jacksonville on Sunday slug it out in a very, very mediocre football game. And then, of course, the thriller, Carolina Panthers going down to New Orleans and losing to Drew Brees and the crew. Of those four games, man, anything in particular stood out to you about, you know, each game or just, you know, what stood out in general to you?
Man, defense with that Jacksonville and Buffalo Bills game. Blake Bortles was freaking 88 yards and 87 rushing yards. That was horrible. That game was very, very, very ugly, man. But shout out to what's my man Ramsey, the cornerback,
Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah, Jalen Ramsey. Yeah,
Florida State.
Yeah, sassy Ramsey. That's what we call him. but yeah, he stepped up. I'm looking forward. Sassy Ramsey, baby. You know what I mean?
You call this man sassy, man.
But,
oh, yeah, wait, hold on, Kyle. You mean to tell me you haven't listened to a Jalen Ramsey interview?
I have. Come on, remember, man. Now, I watched it. I'm a Florida State fan, so I remember Jalen Ramsey from Florida State.
Okay. He's sassy.
But I'll say this. I don't remember Jalen having those sound bites when he was at Florida State. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, gotcha.
I mean, you know, shout out to him stepping up. It's going to be interesting him going up against, you know, arguably what we all probably pretty much, a lot of people say the best receiver in NFL right now, Antonio Brown. Mm-hmm. Had time to rest up his injury. You know, hey, Ken caught it, man. I think he was the only one in the show that said Atlanta Falcons was going to beat the Rams. And for his reasoning, and it all showed. Everything showed this past weekend for that. And what was the other game? Yeah, Andy Reid. Kansas City losing that game, man. The way they've been flowing and the way they was on the right track and finish off this season, I predicted them to win that game against Tennessee. But Tennessee, man, they stepped up and crawled back in it, man. I mean, not crawled, but they got back in that game and won, man. A tough playoff win under your boy Mariota, man. Like that was crazy. And then what was the last one? Yeah, the Chiefs and Saints and Carolina. I think, who did I say was going there? I forgot who I think I said the Saints. I think I predicted the Saints to win that one. But yeah, you know, unfortunate for Cam Newton. They couldn't get this shows with that game. The Panthers front office, get that man Cam some weapons to throw give him some receivers. That should be one of your main focus going into this draft or free agency, you know, once the offseason begins. Like, give this man some weapons to throw to. He already has a solid running game in Stewart. You know, we got Greg Olsen, but you need somebody on that on the wide to be a threat, man. Because we already know Carolina defense is pretty solid. They've been pretty solid over the past 4 to 5 years. So at this point, you got to give this guy some weapons to throw to. Like, he can't just keep going to Greg Olsen all the time, and Greg Olsen getting up in age. So it's like, you got to get that guy some young weapons, man. Even if you probably got to draft, you know, two receivers in this draft. Try to look for some gems, man, because that's what I found out too. Give Cam some freaking weapons to throw to. But other than that, you know, looking at the scores and stuff, I thought it was a pretty wild, NFL weekend, a good wild card playoff weekend.
True indeed. Cam, what about you, man? What stood out to you in these games this past weekend?
Well, thank God, that Buffalo Tennessee game. Jeez,
Jacksonville, geez, Buffalo, Jacksonville.
Yeah, Buffalo, Jacksonville. My God, yeah. Man. I think both teams were nervous. Because I think that, both. That was their first time being in the playoffs.
In a long time.
Yeah, Buffalo hadn't been in the playoffs since 1999. Yeah. And Jacksonville hadn't been in 10 years.
Yeah, it definitely showed, man. They, that was a horrible game. And I think the ratings on that. As a matter of fact, they said the ratings for all of the games over the weekend were down double digits.
Yes, yes.
So, and then that one, and, you know, they're trying to look at the markets, and I think that's valid, but nevertheless, nobody's flocking to watch the NFL playoffs like that. So, but yeah, that game was terrible. When I looked up and saw that Bortles had more rushing yards than Fournette, I was like, wow, that's incredible. But Kansas City, Tennessee, Andy Reid, man. Like, I think most people have already talked about it. B said it on this show. If you get a ball to Kareem Hunt, you'll win. You're up 21-3. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is just hand the ball off, shorten the game, get a couple of first downs, keep that offense off the field because you know you can't stop the run statistically, and you have a shot. And you have a shot at winning that game. And ironically enough, or interestingly enough, I should say, the offensive coordinator for that game got a job, the very next day or the
next
after?
Yep.
Matt Nagy.
He's now the head coach of the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, which is crazy. So if I would have saw that, ain't no way in hell I would have hired him.
he must interview well.
He must have. Like,
or have a good agent.
And Alex Smith, give Alex Smith props, man. He was balling, man. Full disclosure, I forgot to say this. I was over my father-in-law, so I did get a chance. I actually did watch 3 of the 4 games on this weekend.
Okay.
Because I know I told everybody, you know, well, I protested the regular season, and more than likely, I'll probably be over there just hanging out watching the playoffs too. So, but part of my job is done. But but anyway, we got 89 mil, man. but yeah, man. I felt bad for Alex Smith. They didn't deserve that. I felt bad for Kansas City. They did not deserve that at all. And that was a crime. But it was a fluky game, man. Like, if you guys followed the IG, you saw the Mariota touchdown. I posted.
Yeah, he threw it to himself.
Yeah, yeah. So it was just a lot of fluky things that happened. But Matt Nagy, man, he fell on the sword, man, and said he called every play, but I don't believe him. But that's neither here nor there. The Saints-Panthers game was really interesting. Cam played well. I'm with you, B. They're going back to the way they were when they first drafted Cam, where he didn't have any talent. Funches clearly wasn't ready for the moment because I don't know how in the hell he didn't even try to catch that ball. That was the game. That was the game right there. I like the call that Peyton made to go ahead and win it because I'm like, you got Drew Brees. They can't stop him. It's 4th-and-2. Go ahead and win the game right now. And it didn't work out. But I can tell you this much. That was an interception. So there, and they didn't even review that because he didn't have control over the ball, which has been the thing that we've been hearing about all year long.
Right.
So that was iffy. So there were the intentional grounding call was iffy. So there were some questionable things in that game that went against the Panthers' way and impacted them, their ability to win that game. Because I got to tell you, I thought they were going to win it. When they had that ball and Cam was driving, I was like, oh, this is over. And then, of course, the intentional grounding, and then that was it. That was a wrap. And then the sack on 4th down. But for me, man, what I was really interested in hearing from a lot of people on Monday was their reaction to the Rams and the Falcons. Now, a lot of people are jumping on the Falcons bandwagon and, you know, saying, oh, they look like – they're ready to make their run, or they're scary, or they're this, that, and the other. I mean, it still kind of looked like the same Falcons. They just played with more poise than them. Sarkisian actually had a good second half game plan when he ran the ball and they couldn't stop them. And that set up the two big plays. Give Matt Ryan props for that touchdown pass to Julio.
Yes.
that was outstanding. So, and they just made the plays they needed to make to win that game. And defensively, they made the plays they needed to make to win that game because the Rams did march right back down on them. But defensively, they shut Gurley down. I know Gurley had 100 yards, but if you watch the whole game, you'll understand that his impact wasn't really felt. Like, you didn't feel the 100 yards that he had. Those were chunk plays that he got, and they happened, like, on one or two series. But – you know, look, I think the week before, I think it was week 15, my cousin-in-law or in-law came over, and we were over my father-in-law's, and he said, I got it all mapped out. He said, the Panthers can get back to the Super Bowl because all they have to do is beat a young Rams team, beat a young Rams team, beat a Foles-led Philadelphia team, who's looked suspect. And if Case Keenum make it, you face Case Keenum. He said, so those are matchups you can win, and in Minnesota you'll be in a dome. So the defenses are tough, but you've been playing the tough defenses all year long in the division. So once he drew the roadmap, I was like, damn, you know what? You're right. So the first test was to get past the Rams, and they managed to do that. But everybody picking the Rams, everybody jumping on the Rams, the number one scoring offense, Sean McVay this, Goff, Ty Gurley, everybody were propping them up and saying how they were going to beat the Falcons, and the Falcons didn't look right, and I didn't hear anybody really commenting. As a matter of fact, they rarely even talked about the game, but that's just the way the media go, because I wanted to hear a lot of people walk back their comments on Monday morning. But I think out of all the teams that I saw in the wild card matchup, I think the Falcons definitely looked like they played with the most composure, and Breeze was simply flat out on fire. Everybody else, man, they might be getting up out the paint next week.
True indeed. Man, you made some great points. You know, I before I even jump into the teams, I want to just kind of piggyback off something you said about the ratings. And I forgot to put it down as far as for something else to talk about. We don't necessarily have to. The ratings did come out, and the ratings are down from last year. And, you know, Roger Goodell said, you know, he made some comments or what have you. He said, hey, you know, the ratings are down, but, you know, our product is still great. And he said those numbers could be kind of misleading because the ratings, I think, are down like 10%. And they were down 8% from the previous year. So what we're seeing is declining numbers. And if you study statistics or you know how money, how numbers operate, you know, you can manipulate data to you know, kind of twist it any way that you want it to read. I'll say this, while the ratings are down, you know, the NFL is still drawing, you know, 18 or 19 on the Nielsen rate. That the highest rated program each week is Sunday Night Football. And that's across the board as far as TV is concerned. And then the second highest rated program is Thursday Night Football. So, you know, from a ratings perspective, yeah, the numbers are down, but they're killing it. And I think, okay, if let's say if the NFL is doing an 18, you know, a Cleveland Warriors game will probably do like a 10. Like, so it's not, so basketball isn't there per se. But I will say this much, maybe not now, maybe not a year from now, maybe not 5 years from now, but it won't be, if this trend continues, and it's far beyond the boycotts as far as, you know, people boycotting because of Kaepernick or boycotting against Kaepernick, whatever the case may be, we're going to see a trend, and we're already starting to see a trend where the NBA could move into the position of being the most popular sport as far as being watched on TV. Because I think ultimately, you know, the product, and you know, and this, people have been going back and forth as to why the numbers are down. We talked about it a little earlier this year, well, last year, really early in the season. I mean, if you want to keep it a buck, you know, a lot of games were bad, you know, so we talked about the quality of play, you know, the stars got hurt. I mean, you look at teams like, you know, the Green Bay Packers lose. I mean, like, we lost Aaron Rodgers, you lost Odell Beckham Jr. So, you know, this is a star driven league. I mean, like, you'd have to wonder what the NBA would look like if, you know, Steph Curry, LeBron, James Harden, Greek Freak, all of them got hurt like at the same time. And, you know, do we really want to watch their teams if they're not playing? So Kim makes a great point. I think the protests had an effect. You know, now Roger Goodell's not going to say that, but it did. And, you know, contrary to a lot of people's belief, I think that there were probably more people boycotting the NFL in favor of Kaepernick as opposed to those who said, well, we're not going to watch it because of the constant protests. Because in a lot of games, there weren't any protests going on. So there weren't any, you know, players taking knees in this past weekend's games or what have you. So that's not the excuse. You know, there's a segment of the population, contrary to popular belief, there's a segment of the population that has not tuned into NFL games in support of Colin Kaepernick. And I think you'll see that trend continue. Now, you know, we'll see how it goes as far as, you know, you get to the next round and ultimately get to the Super Bowl. But, you know, the numbers are going to be down and the NBA is on the come up. The NBA's ratings are up 25% right now. And NBA ratings normally aren't this high this early in the season. You know, fans normally start trickling in after NFL season ends. So that's something to keep an eye on. as far as the wild card games, like you said, Ken and B, the Tennessee, Kansas City game, I was surprised. Kansas City's up 21-3. I really feel bad for Alex Smith because I think Alex Smith had a great season. I think his time is done. I think they've, you know, all but, you know, moved on. Mahomes, the rookie, is probably going to be their guy. You know, I like Andy Reid. I've always liked Andy Reid, but Andy Reid, you know, other than that one run that he had with T.O. that year with Philly, you know, has he really, really succeeded as a coach in the playoffs? I know they made it to a couple of NFC championship games, but, you know, people, Andy Reid is highly regarded in NFL circles, and he should be. But this team, you know, that's not a game that you lose. So I'm a little disappointed in Kansas City. But if you guys follow our Instagram page, you saw the hit that Travis Kelce took. I mean, he was out cold. So the game really changed. And, you know, that happens when, you know, stars go down. The Falcons-Rams game, I was very impressed with the Falcons' defense more than anything else. The Rams came into the game the most high-scoring offense in the NFL, and the Falcons defense has shut him down. The Falcons defense in the second half of the season is only averaging, giving up like right at 16 points a game. So they've been impressive. I'll say this much about the Falcons. If they could, and like Ken said, it's a lot of people jumping on the bandwagon. I don't know if the Falcons have enough to go on, because their inconsistencies come from the offensive coordinator, Steve Sarkisian, not knowing what to call and how to get his players involved. And I think that's something that the former offensive coordinator, now head coach of the San Francisco 49ers, Kyle Shanahan, knew how to do. And I think it's going to take Sarkisian a year to get it done. You know, this Falcons team, I could see them in the NFC Championship game. I don't think they could make it back to I would love to see it happen, but I don't think they're going to make it back to the Super Bowl. But even making it to the playoffs has been a success thus far for the Falcons. So don't be surprised if and when you see them get knocked out. I think I've been very impressed with what they've done defensively, more so than what they've done offensively. That Buffalo Jacksonville game, that was for diehards. I mean, like, if you were able to watch that game and not fall asleep, you know, you were doing something. It was only for the, you know, if you like defense, those quarterbacks probably set set quarterbacking back a few years. B mentioned it, man. I mean, Blake Bortles, man, this dude, he rushed for 85 yards. No, he was the second. Yeah, he rushed for 88 yards and he passed for 87 yards. Michael Vick was the only other quarterback that had that statistic before, where they rushed for more than what they passed for. He did that back in 2005. And obviously that's not going to get it done this weekend against the Steelers. And then the Carolina and New Orleans game, I thought that game was great. Like you said, Ken, Devin Funchess, I don't know what he was doing on that play, because he cleared the cornerback and the safety misplayed the ball. So if he didn't even have to jump. All he had to do is just take a step to the left and the ball hits him in his chest between the 1 and the 7, and the ball hits the ground. And, Cam played well. It was a shootout between he and Breeze. I like the fact that Carolina got down by like 14 and then Cam hits McCaffrey with the little dump pass and McCaffrey goes like 70 yards. I think the Panthers have a lot to be proud of. They had a great season. It's going to be interesting to see. They're going to have an interesting offseason. Obviously, you all know, with the owner, Jerry Richardson, stepping aside and selling the team. So we don't know what direction they're going to be in. Earlier today, the offensive coordinator, Mike Shula, got fired. So Cam is going to have a new offensive coordinator coming into next season. So speaking of the Panthers, before we move to the college football, many of you saw the game. You saw what happened in the fourth quarter. Cam Newton goes down. He's trying to avoid a sack. He goes down, but uses his arm to kind of prop himself up, and he gets leveled by a defensive lineman for the New Orleans Saints. Immediately he was on the ground. We're thinking, okay, he's got a concussion. Cam gets up. He starts walking over to the sideline, and then he just kind of lays down. And he's clearly in concussion protocol. But lo and behold, 2 minutes later, I mean, he goes under the tent. They evaluate him for, and the word comes back to the network is that he got hit in the eye. And you see Cam on the sideline with some type of ice compression on his eye. And he's back in the game literally in 2 minutes. So the question I have for you guys, it looks like they clearly circumvented the concussion protocol. Ken, I'll start with you, man. What do you think the penalty should be, if there should be a penalty, as far as how the Panthers actually handled this process?
I don't think it should be a penalty, and I think they were smart enough to find a way around it if he was indeed concussed. I'm going to lean towards Cam and the story that we're being told, and that it was his eye. I did see him squinting. You know, I don't know if he was squinting. I don't know if he was winking.
He was winking, all right.
Yeah, winking. You know, just saying, hey, we're going to say it's my eye. Just follow my lead, one or the other. But, man, look, it's the playoffs. He has the whole offseason to to heal up. So as soon as I saw it, it looked like he was concussed, but he wasn't doing the Kelsey. So since he wasn't, you know, wobbling when he got up,
right.
I thought he was fine until he took the knee when he got to the sideline. But then they explained that, and I was like, oh, okay. Man, it's like, what, 5 minutes left in that game or so? Nah, Cam.
Yeah, because you know, if he goes out of the game, that is really over for the Panthers.
That's a wrap. Cam sits. He need to be out there. And you just deal with the repercussions later. So I'm okay with what took place.
B, what about you, man? Your thoughts on how Carolina handled it? We know that I know the NFL fined a team $100,000 earlier this year for how they handled the concussion protocol. I can't remember which I'll look it up. I can't remember who it was, but the fine was like $100,000. And we talked about this. I remember us talking about the concussion protocol in our NFL preview podcast back in August. And we threw out the question as to whether or not they would actually send someone through a protocol when it's a star player. You know what I mean? I mean, you can replace your running back. You can replace your receiver. You can place your star cornerback. But you can't the quarterback position is the one position that you can't replace. And lo and behold, we saw, you know, a couple of weeks ago with Tom Savage in Houston, you know, he was on the ground and they're still investigating that. So what do you think the penalty should be if at all?
Who was penalized for that before? You remember what team?
I can't remember. It was somebody.
A quarterback.
They got hit for it was like $100,000 fine. And
but still taking them, putting them back out there to play.
Yeah, for putting them back out there to play.
I mean, if you find that other team, you gotta find Cam. I think, yeah, like Ken said, for them making the whole some in his eye, they trying to make it seem like so they won't get the penalty. And they like, look, damn, this the playoffs. We playing against our division rivals in a wild card game, and we gotta win this. So I don't know if that was the situation, but you know, if you find the other team, and if it comes back that it is a you know, somewhat of concussion symptoms or concussion protocol, you find Carolina too.
I mean, it was the Seahawks in Week 10 for Russell Wilson. I think that game was on. It might have been on Sunday night. Russell Wilson went in the tent he was literally in there for about like 10 seconds. He was saying that it was his jaw, it was a Thursday night game. He was saying it was his jaw. He clearly was. You know, should have been in concussion protocol, but the NFL did fine the Seattle Seahawks $100,000 for the lack of, you know, concussion protocol.
Yeah, I mean, if you find Seahawks, find Carolina for that as well. I think it'd be fair. I mean, it's like at least that'd be the punishment to be consistent. You know how we always get on NFL saying they don't know when they're going to discipline stuff. They just do stuff on the fly. If you're going to do that, at least keep it consistent with, you know, with the punishment. So I would say, you know, for Carolina to do it, but they had to dig deeper with that poking the eye stuff. But I just think the meaning of the game, you know, kind of made the doctors just kind of be like, hey man, just say you got something going on in your eye and just go back out there and play. Because this hey, they're like, hey man, this game too poor, man. Just go on out there and say you got something in your eye and then you go out there and play. I mean, that could have been a situation. Like I said, because playoff games, these guys are hungry to win. You know what I'm saying? These organizations are hungry to win. So they'll do any and everything. They won't think about the repercussions later. They'll do anything and everything. So I say fine them. You know, you gotta protect the quarterbacks, especially the bros, man. Especially the bros.
Yeah, I agree. I think they clearly circumvented this. And you know, but the thing about it is that when you're in the heat of the moment, just like with the Seattle Seahawks needed to get that win. Now, if this was Week 2. Yeah, maybe they take Cam under the tent. Maybe they take him in the locker room, run some more tests or whatever the case may be. But, I mean, Carolina literally, if I'm not mistaken, were down 13 or 14 at the time. So, nah, you need Cam Newton out there on the field. And, you know, no disrespect to Derek Anderson, but he wasn't going to get it done. So, you know, you come back with your, I guess, you have time to come up with a lie or response, if you will, to the NFL. And then, but that stuff can be taken care of after the game. When you're dealing with in the heat of the moment, I understand why they did it. It doesn't benefit Cam Newton at all. It doesn't benefit his long-term health if he was out there with a concussion. I mean, he came out there and was still slinging it. So I don't know how concussed he really was, you know, to begin with, but you can't say he got poked in the eye, because he didn't. It was clear he didn't get poked in the eye. We've all been poked in the eye. And what he was looking like the other day, that was nothing like anybody getting poked in the eye. So I digress. Let's move on. The college football champion has been crowned. The tide has rolled. Alabama Crimson Tide stormed back and erased a 13-point third quarter deficit to force the national championship game into overtime, where they won on a walk-off touchdown from their backup QB. Let me make sure I spell his so I pronounce his name right. Tua Tagovailoa. I think that's how you pronounce it. And so let's give our thoughts, man. Crazy game, a lot of ebb and flow. You had two SEC teams battling it out, and you know, for supremacy to win this game. B, I'll start first with you, man. Just give me your overall thoughts on the game before we dive into it.
Oh, I mean, yeah, it was what I was hoping for it to be. An entertaining game. Going to overtime, what more can you ask for? An overtime championship game for it all. Yeah, I thought it was very entertaining. I thought, you know, unfortunately, I feel bad for you know, Georgia natives that who roots for, like, the Bulldogs and the Falcons. It's been a rough 11 months for y'all, man. You know, I hate it had to happen to him. I hate it had to do it. But yeah, I thought it was a great game, man. Gotta give props. You can hate him if you want to, man. But Nick Saban,
yes,
making that adjustment, man, in the second half, I thought that was brilliant. That was brilliant, because Georgia scheming for what's my man name, the other quarterback,
Jake Fromm.
No, the one that played in the first half,
Hurts.
Oh, Jalen Hurts. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they've been scheming for him, and for Nick Saban to throw in that dark horse, man, in the second half, and that dude, that freshman out there, and play under those bright lights like it was nothing, like it was another game. That was brilliant. That's great coaching right there. That's great coaching and making adjustments, man. So yeah, I thought it was a great game, man. I thought it was a fun watch. It was crazy, you know, ups and downs and stuff. It was good. Both teams played their heart out. So yeah, man, what more can you ask for a national championship game, for a college football closer?
True indeed. Ken, what about you, man? What your overall thoughts on this game before we dive into it?
Absolutely terrible, man. the whole thing was absolutely terrible. And I heard somebody say this today. I think it was Colin Cowherd, and he said that when Alabama is attempting a comeback, it seems like time stands still. That is so true, because that was the longest second half it felt like I have ever watched before. Because for whatever reason, Georgia, just one thing kept happening after another, and the clock just wouldn't roll. And I'm with B, man. I saw, shout out to my man Jay Forrest on Twitter. He was downtown, and he saw he just said, man, people were just like distraught. It really felt like it was Atlanta all over. It was the Super Bowl all over again. 27 lead. You're up at after they just scored. You score a big play. You go up 27, and you can't hold on. You get a break with the missed field goal, and then you blow that. It was just awful. It was a terrible game. And I just feel bad for the people in Georgia. I will say that I think Kirby Smart is going to be a problem, because he definitely had them boys ready to play. But I'm with B. I'm completely with B. As soon as the second half started, and I saw that they were starting Miguel / Bruno Mars in the second half instead of Jalen Hurts, I knew we were in trouble, because, like B said, Kirby hadn't game plan for the hit that at all. And when that boy came out and he tossed that ball down that field and it just barely missed Ridley's hands, I was like, oh, Georgia in trouble. Georgia is in trouble. It's going to be trouble. And it was a lot of trouble for Georgia, man. And they didn't know how to deal with it. And the thing about it, man, is shout out No, I just don't like y'all, Alabama. I just don't. You know, 5-9, good, congrats. You know, take that, whatever. Y'all shouldn't even been in the playoffs, number one. So you got a gift from the gods.
That's what Skip said, too. Skip said that, too.
Yeah, first of all, you shouldn't have even been in there. So I don't know what you're cheering and celebrating for so much.
Yeah, I tweeted that, too. I was like, I tweeted last night, I said, to think, Alabama almost didn't make the Final Four.
Yeah, they never should have even been in there. But you did. You won it. It goes in history books. Walk-off touchdown. Classic game. You know, hoorah, hoorah. Thing about it, man, and I'll end with this, is that watching that kid throw that ball, man, they could probably win the next two or three. And the other thing is, I like the guy.
Crazy.
Yes, Tua. I like him. It's going to be hard, man. I need him to transfer. Because I was like, you know what? I like this guy. I like this guy. I don't know. I don't know if I can root for Alabama, but I like him, though. I like him, man. He showed a lot of heart.
Man, joining us right now, man, is the homie FIFO. FIFO, what up, man?
Yo, what it do?
Oh, perfect timing, man. You saw it, man. National championship game comes down to the wire. The Alabama Crimson Tide roll the Georgia Bulldogs in a walk-off touchdown in overtime. Man, what's your overall thoughts before we dive into it and get a little deeper?
Man, so let me tell y'all the story, man. So this past about 2 weeks, I've been my boss. My boss was out of the business, so I've been taking a lot of responsibility this past weekend, doing hella stuff, hella tired, right? So Monday night comes, trying to watch the game, I knock out. I wake up at halftime, start watching it. I'm in and out.
Okay.
I finally like wake up, and it's the last play of the game. And I see it happen. And I say, I looked at my fiance and I said, you can't trust no Georgia team. Not a one of them. And then all season, who have I been pushing for when it comes to football in general? The goddamn Falcons. But see, I jumped off that bandwagon early. But I kept this straight for Georgia because I'm like, the talent is there.
Yeah, you can ride for Georgia.
Offense, defense. Kirby Smart, I really like him. Obviously, he's a Nick Saban disciple. He knows what he's doing, and he's bringing in the number one recruiting class next year with the number one quarterback and like a top five defensive player. Like Georgia is truly a powerhouse. So you know, I'm watching this when I finally wake up, and I see him look off the safety, and he just throw that thing, and that thing was beautiful, and when it hit, my heart sank, and I'm not a Georgia fan at all. So I could only imagine how all of these purebred Georgia Bulldog fans are feeling right now. Trust me, I feel for you. But unfortunately, y'all believe in a Georgia team, and that's where y'all messing up. Because, I'm just, even though I know UGA is going to be a formidable next year, like they're obviously, because they're bringing back guys, they have the number one class coming in, I get it, but I'm not buying any stock. I can't be invested no more with no Georgia team, man. I can't do it. I've gone against the grain last year, I went against the grain this year, or in 2017. I'm not doing it no more, man. I'm not for my sanity, you know what I'm saying, I can't do it. I can't do it, man.
You know what, FIFO? And here's the thing, man. I jumped off the bandwagon. Like, after Mark Richt just let me down so many years back in the late 2000s, around the early 2000s, whenever. Mm-hmm. I was like, you know what? I'm done. Forget it. I'm moving on. And for whatever reason, they sucked me right back in. and I was like, you know what? Kirby Smart, Nick Saban disciple, he know his moves, 11-0, that streak got to end at some point, up 27, and then just like that, like Kyle said in the text thread, he went Mark Richt on us. And it's like, that you're not supposed to do that. That's why you're here.
He went straight Mark Richt. My general thought, first of all, I thought it was a great game. I think Alabama you gotta, and I know Ken don't want to hear me say this, but you gotta tip your hat to Nick Saban. Now, Saban is going to get a lot of credit for putting the Hawaiian in. I'm gonna call him Hawaii because I don't want to butcher his name again. He's gonna get Tua. A lot of credit for Tua. Okay, let's call him Tua because I can't pronounce his last name. And I've looked at a video of how to pronounce his last name two times before we started this podcast. I still messed it up. But so Tua, and it was funny because I was texting with one of my boys who is a diehard Alabama fan, and he kept telling me, he said, man, we need to put Tua in. He's like, Hurts is not going to get it done tonight. Hurts is not going to get it done tonight. And if you look at how the first half played, Kirby Smart basically said defensively, Georgia is going to put 8 men in the box, and we're going to play man up on the outside, and we don't think that Hurts is going to beat us with his arm. He's going to have to beat us with his arm. And the only thing that Hurts did in the first half was he broke off a couple of long runs, but that was it. He didn't throw the ball well at all. His numbers were terrible. And he kept saying, my boy kept texting me saying, we need to put Tua in the game. And I'm like, nah, Nick Saban's not going to switch his quarterback in at halftime. He's not going to do that. And lo and behold, he did. And like you said, Kent, Georgia didn't have an answer for it. They spent the better part of the third quarter on their heels trying to figure out. And I've seen this kid play. He's played in, I think, 7 of the 12 games that Alabama had. And he's good. The thing about him is that not only is he a threat to run, but he can throw the ball. And, you know, I don't know how much time they spent, you know, because nobody thought that this kid was going to play in this game. Nick Saban had hinted that he might play in their semifinal game, but he didn't, you know, he didn't see the field or whatever. But yeah, man, I thought this was a great game. I thought, you know, Saban bringing him in, because at that point, you know, Georgia was up 13-0, but they were kicking Alabama's tail. You know, it was kicking their ass. I mean, like, it wasn't even close. So he really didn't have much of a choice. It wouldn't have hurt if he had brought Tua in, and then let's say they don't do anything, he can come back to Hurts. You know what I'm saying? So, but he got in there and got rolling, and I give Hurts a lot of credit for, you know, being the bigger man, because I probably would have been on the sidelines soaking, mad as hell, and this kid is coming in and taking my spot, you know. But I thought it was a great game. I think, you know, Georgia, you know, did what they were supposed to do up until a certain point. And then they just kind of lost it. I think they lost their aggressiveness, and I think they went soft. And like you said, Kirby went Mark Richt. So that leads me to this question. FIFO, I'll start with you. Did Georgia blow the game, or did Alabama take the victory from them?
Man, when you win like that, you take the game.
But the kicker missed missed two chip shots.
That's true. Look, things have to go your way. And obviously, if you miss two chip shots like that, okay, you can make the argument that you gave them the game, right? You gave Alabama the opportunity. But buddy, the Hawaiian, I'm with you, Kyle, you still got to make that throw.
Yeah.
It's not like they was in the red zone, right? We trying to make like a 5-10-yard play. Like, this was 60-70 yards. You know what I'm saying? Like the ball was up there for a minute.
Yeah.
I think when you have to make a play like that to win the game, you, regardless of what happened before that, you took the game. Because that's the only way you can win.
Mm.
So to me, I feel like Bama took that game.
Okay. What about you, B? Did Alabama take the victory from Georgia, or did Georgia give it away and blow the game?
Man. I say Georgia... They blew it. Well, it's almost a little bit of both because of the adjustments that Alabama made when they went to take it. But Georgia, man, after you sack them, you got to protect that end zone. You should have more guys dropping back after you got that huge sack, man. But yeah, I say Georgia lost it, man. I feel like Kirby started playing too safe. Like, he was playing too safe, man. Like, so I would say Georgia lost it more so than Alabama taking it.
What about you, Ken? Did Alabama take this from Georgia as far as the victory, or did Georgia blow it and give it away?
Man, there you go, B, man. Call it what it is, man. They blew that game. You were basically gifted this game. A chip shot field goal, and he not only just barely missed it, like, he shanked the heck out of that ball. And you know what?
My golf shot.
Hey, and I was telling my father-in-law, I said, that brother shouldn't have been over there talking to that kicker before he stepped on the field.
The brother jinxed him.
Yeah, Dwayne Harris. I think that's his name. He should have left that man alone. Running back,
yeah,
he should have left that man alone. Talking about, you got this. Nah, he ain't got nothing. Nah, you and the thing is, B, they did have the safeties back. First of all, what's that guy's name? Patrick, I think the cornerback, he had been getting cooked all night. So I'm not surprised he got beat. But a senior safety should not be playing in the middle of the field and get caught like that. But there were a multitude of opportunities Georgia had to win this game. Let's go through them. First of all, let's start with the block punt that was a false start that they was called offsides. Never should have happened. So they get the ball back on the punt. What about the missed face mask / horse collar that they missed? Okay, so all right, fine, you missed it. All right, so Georgia get the ball back again. What about when they called a run option for the quarterback? Fromm go out to the right, he gets tackled, and then the defender gets up and push his head down aggressively and walk off the field. And it wasn't like a tap, like he
mushed him,
violently pushed him. That should have been a personal foul. So that should have been 15 yards. Let's look at another play. How about the first touchdown they scored when they had three Georgia defenders around Tua and nobody got him down, trying to hit him instead of tackle. And he ends up picking the first down, and then they score the touchdown. Oh, I'll give you another one. How about the interception when Tua got mixed up on one of the plays, and he thought they were doing a pass, and they thought they were doing a run? He threw an interception, and then instead of running the ball, Kirby Smart decided to call a pass play, and they give the ball right back when you were up 27. Everything is going your way. But you know what? That's all in the third quarter. How about the fourth quarter? When he did get conservative. Let's talk about the wild dog. You run two wild dog plays? Two wild dog plays on one series? One series, and you got nothing? You didn't get anything on the first play? And then on the third down play, you run it again when Sony Michel is carving? Sony Michel is not only getting big yardage, but he's getting tough yardage. Nick Chubb couldn't do anything, but Michel had it going. And last but not least, the countless number of drop balls that they had, and that was just in the first half. But, yeah, everything that I just detailed out is exactly how Georgia blew the game. If all of that stuff go away, and if was the fifth, we'd all be drunk, as the saying goes, then Georgia should win that game. But they had it, and they just – Alabama just – they got the breaks, and that's how you win 5 or 9 championships.
Man, I couldn't agree more. I think for me, man, Georgia blew it. They had opportunities. I go back to, you know, what you just said, Ken. You go back to the that point in the fourth quarter where, you know, Tua is making plays and then he makes a freshman mistake. He throws into coverage and gets picked off, right? And so you're Georgia. You're up by, I think they're by 13 at this particular time. I think they're by 10 at this point. And the next play, Fromm drops back. I don't know why you're having Fromm throw the ball, but Fromm drops back and he throws the ball and it bounces off somebody's helmet and Alabama gets the ball back right back on the next play. So, you know, momentum shifts like that, I think, are really killers. And I tweeted out, you know, one of these freshmen are going to make mistakes. They're going to make a crucial mistake. And those that both were crucial mistakes on those interceptions. But then I fast forward to the overtime period. And Fromm takes a sack. In that situation, you cannot take a sack. Fromm takes a sack in overtime. You know, they line up. The kicker with the glasses comes out there. He nails a 51-yarder. Boom. No problem. And then Tua comes out, and he takes a sack. Bad sack. You can't afford to take that sack. And so you're thinking, and Georgia's thinking in their minds, well, hell, we just saw this kicker miss the 36-yarder. There's no – if we can just hold it, second and 26 – if we can just hold him, he's not going to make a field goal to tie it and send it into a second overtime, because he can't. If he can't make a 36-yarder, he's damn sure not going to be able to make a 50-yarder. And they're in a cover two on the game-winning touchdown. They're in a cover two, and the safety, I don't know what he was looking at, the safety on the hash. If you watch the field angle, he doesn't get his drop on his half. So you're in a two deep zone. You both safeties have to be in their zone. He never got to his zone, and he looked at the quarterback too the whole time. And like FIFO said, he looked him off perfectly. He looked like a veteran. He looked him off, and he does not, if you watch the clip of the touchdown, he does not look at the receiver that he's throwing the ball to, another true freshman, until the ball leaves his hand. That's because he knew that he was going to get man coverage. I mean, he knew that he knew where that safety was, that he knew once that guy, that cornerback released him, his receiver was going to be wide open, and he was. And so it was a great pass by Tua. And, you know, I mean, Georgia had their opportunities. I mean, you have a kick, you have a kicker blow a kick like that just to even send it in overtime. And so, you know, I'm a Florida State fan, so I don't care one way or the other. But I do feel for the Georgia players because they play their hearts out. But no, you blew that game. And so the last question I have, and FIFO already touched on it, you can add more if you want, FIFO. And I'll start first with you, B. Can you trust Georgia teams? Because as soon as this game ended, we started seeing the memes, you know, the Falcons, and, you know, of course, they blew their 25-point lead in the Super Bowl, and then Georgia blows this 13-point lead in the third quarter, and, you know, it's well documented that the Braves have, you know, the Braves have, what, one title in 14 years or something like that of their dominance of winning, you know, their division, but not winning a World Series. The Hawks, man, ain't much I can say about the Hawks. The Hawks had the best record in the Eastern Conference a couple of years ago and got swept by LeBron and the crew. B, can you trust the Georgia team?
No. Hell no. Can't trust them. You know what I'm saying? No rings, no ships from only the Braves and, what, that 95?
Yeah, that was 90. You know, yeah, I think yeah, something like that, yeah.
Was in 1980, so.
1980.
No, you can't trust them, man. You can't trust them. It's unfortunate. You know, I know they wish that most Atlanta teams or Georgia teams in general have more dubs and more championships and more banners to hang. But, no. Yeah, I don't trust them. Do not trust them.
Ken, what about you? Is there any point in your adult lifehood that you will trust the Georgia team?
I think – when Ralph said it, to put it as succinct as he did, like, it just really made everything so clear. Because you never really knew what the problem was. And the problem is that it's trust. It's putting your faith in an entity, into someone, something that continuously lets you down. But for whatever reason, you continue to come back to it. And
why?
Exactly. Why?
Why? You know, that's the question I keep asking. Why?
I ask myself that question about the Lions. I really do. I ask myself that question about the Lions. Every other year, my boys and my dad, we always be like, why are we still rooting for this team? Like, do we? Like, why are we still rooting for the Lions? Like, what's going on?
But you know what, B? Yeah. You're from Detroit. I'm from Meridian, Mississippi, right? Since I moved here, you know, I've adopted certain sports. The Georgia Bulldogs were really like the one. I got caught up with the Falcons, even though Ralph gave us the game. He said, don't do it. Ralph told us, don't do it. And they set us up. They set us up 28-3, 27. They showed it last night. They were up 20-10 against Alabama before and got blown out. They do every single time. And like I said, I jumped off. I was like, Mark Richt just can't get it done. I'm through with it. Here comes Kirby Smart. I was like, oh, they're going to blow it. They found a way to blow it. Then they got back. And, oh, they're not going to beat Oklahoma. Then they beat Oklahoma. I was like, you know what? Maybe they got a shot. Get up 27. And I'm like, man, the blueprint's right there. And here comes Bruno Mars. And the whole game just turns around. And it's just like – it's just like, what the hell is going on right now? Kirby Smart knows better. He coached.
He played at Georgia.
Yes. So, and here I am again, falling for the banana in the tailpipe. I'm doing it again. I'm a scoring lover. Because what did I say earlier? I said, you know what? man, Kirby Smart. Ralph said he got the number one recruiting class coming back next year.
Yeah, they're already loaded. They're loaded next year.
Yeah, and I'm like, man, you know what? Kirby Smart, man, he got them this far. Man, maybe next year's the year. Maybe next year's the year. So I'm already setting myself up for failure. Like when Ralph said it, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. Yeah. And you heard it here first, originated here first on Dead End Sports, out of the mouth of FIFO. Don't try to copy it. Steal it.
I will say this, man. Yeah,
and I said it years ago.
Go ahead.
You know what I'm saying? Like it ain't like just
yet. No, it ain't something you just made up.
I've been saying this, man. It's sad. Go ahead, Kyle.
I will say this to anybody listening to this podcast. The four of us live here in Atlanta. None of us, ironically, are originally from Atlanta. That being said, the gripe or the knock I've always, and again, I'm a Florida State fan, so I didn't have a dog in the fight. I wanted to see a good game last night because I love college football. But the knock that I've always had on Georgia in particular is that Georgia each year would always lose a game to a team that they shouldn't lose to. They would beat the team that they probably shouldn't have beaten, but they would always lose to the team that they shouldn't lose to. And, you know, that's kind of how I looked at the season. So when Georgia went to South Bend and beat Notre Dame, I was like, okay, that's cool. They'll probably lose to Kentucky. You know what I'm saying? I really, to be honest, Georgia really wasn't on my radar until maybe about week 9 or 10, even though they were, you know, in the top five at that point. I figured that Georgia would lose at some point because that's who they are. And again, I agree with FIFO. Now, there's a caveat to this because I am a Falcons fan. But in saying that, I learned a very important lesson last year. Here's when you can trust a team from Georgia. When they're standing on the field with the trophy in their hand and the clock says 0-0. Until then, you can't trust
them. I give you one better, Kyle. The only way that you could trust Georgia, if Georgia Tech playing UGA, Georgia State playing Georgia Tech. Like, if it's two Georgia teams, then you can trust the Georgia
team. Yeah, then you can
if
trust.
If there's only one of them teams.
Then you can trust. Yeah, so even like the Falcons, I'm optimistic that the Falcons can play well in the play. They've already played well in the playoffs. I don't think they can go to the Super Bowl. If by chance they make it to the Super Bowl, do not trust and believe it until you see Arthur Blank standing in the end zone with a trophy in his hand. Until then, do not believe it because we've seen that it does not work. I'm a Hawks fan, unfortunately. I think the player that is going to bring a championship to the city of Atlanta by the Atlanta Hawks is probably in the third grade right now. Cause it ain't nobody in the NBA right now that's going to bring the Hawks to the championship. So I'm okay with waiting on the Hawks. I understand the kind of basketball team we have. But yeah, as far as Georgia's team, I think part of the, and of course we say some of this in jest, but I think part of the issue with teams in Georgia, in the state of Georgia, there's a mindset to where, I think you don't have the same mindset of a Detroit or a Miami or New York or Philly wherein I think you should get up on your opponent and want to kill and destroy your opponent. I think these teams, and we saw it evident last night, we saw it evident in the Super Bowl, and I don't think it's by coincidence. You get up on a team and you relax and you get cool and you get comfortable. But you can't sit on a 10-point lead or a 13-point lead in the third quarter in a game. In a football game, you can't sit on a 25. Now, conventional wisdom will tell you if you're up by 25 in the third quarter, you probably shouldn't lose the game. You know, they're in your favor to win the game. But no. And I mean, yeah, they were going against, you know, Tom Brady. But I mean, that's another story for another day. But no, to answer the question, should you trust the Georgia team? Only until they have the trophy in their hand. Until then, don't put all your eggs in one basket because they you got to get off that narcotic. They'll disappoint you for real. So we'll see how it goes, man. But yeah, salute to Nick Saban. Salute to the Alabama Crimson Tide. The SEC has another champion, and they reside in Tuscaloosa. Now we got the NFL divisional round coming up this weekend. The Falcons go to Philadelphia. Tennessee goes to New England on Saturday. That's the 4:30 game and the 8:15 game, respectively. And then on Sunday, we got Jacksonville and at New England at 1 o'clock. No, I'm sorry. Let's see. No, Tennessee and New England are the 8:15 Saturday game. And then on Sunday, we got Jacksonville going to Pittsburgh. And New Orleans going to Minnesota, and I think that's the 4:40 game. So, Ken, I'll start first with you. How do you see these games shaking out? Who wins and why?
Okay, so New Orleans, Minnesota, give me Minnesota in that one.
Okay.
I like their defense, man. I think all year long, that's all I've heard, is that their defense is legit and it's for real. I seriously doubt the receivers will be running wide open the way they were against the Carolina Panthers. So give me Minnesota, Tennessee, New England. I'm taking the upstarts. Give me the Titans.
Ken, hey, if y'all hadn't noticed, Ken ain't gonna ever pick New England to win.
The Mariota magic continues, man. Steelers. I'll say this: anytime you have, and I don't know if this isn't common in football, but when you have a player say, "I want them," that's all you need to know.
Mm.
Big Ben wants payback. That Steeler team wants payback, and that doesn't – normally they do the whole PC thing. You know, we're just focusing on that. I was like, nope, give me Jacksonville. Let me get them. Come on. Come on over here. And so give me the Steelers. I'll take them. And Atlanta versus Philly, man. Yeah, I'm taking – it's Nick Foles, man. Give me the Falcons in this one. I like Matt Ryan. I think you're going to see them running the ball. You're going to see a good balanced attack. And that Fuller coaster, man. Philly, man.
I like that.
They're about to get on that Fuller coaster, man. And it's going to be rocky. So and they're not going to like it. So I think this story is going to come to the end. So, yeah, those are my picks.
True indeed. FIFA, what about you, man? Atlanta versus Philadelphia, Tennessee traveling to New England. We got Jacksonville going to Pittsburgh and New Orleans going to Minnesota. How do you see these games shaking out?
I'm gonna take Minnesota for all the reasons Ken said. I'm gonna take the Falcons, even though you can't trust Georgia teams, but you know, they got Nick Foles and you know, look, they got talent. At least the Georgia teams got talent. The football teams got talent, so I'll give them that much. Pittsburgh, obviously, better rounded team. Even though there's dysfunction in the front office, it's hard to go against Tom Brady and Belichick. So I'm gonna take them.
There it is. What about you, B? How do you see these games shaking out?
I think the Saints might pull it out. I think we might have a Falcons versus Saints NFC South NFC Championship game. So I'm gonna go with Saints Falcons. I hate to go against them. I mean, I'm just only doing this to be that upset pick guy of the day. Mm-hmm. But, I think Jacksonville. I see Jacksonville pulling off the upset against Pittsburgh, and I see New England beating Tennessee. But I think, you know, not to wish this on them, but I can see the Jacksonville win this game if Antonio Brown go out. And something might happen where he might go out and Jacksonville might go ahead with the win. You know, I see something crazy like that happening in this NFL game. So that's the only reason why I'm picking Jacksonville with my upset pick for the week.
Yeah, I like on the Saturday games, Falcons versus Eagles. Like you said, Nick Foles, man. If Carson Wentz was playing, I would not be picking the Falcons, but I got to go with the Falcons. I think it's going to be interesting because the Falcons, you know, seem defensively to, you know, have found their way. And, you know, I think right now they're playing good ball. And I can't trust Nick Foles. I will be interested to see how Jalen Mills matches up with Julio Jones when the two teams played last year. Julio went for 6 catches for 73 yards in the first half of the game they played during the regular season, and then they put Jalen Mills on him after halftime, and he finished with just 2 catches for 37 yards. But the Falcons defense, man, I think right now they're 5th in red zone efficiency on opponents only getting 45% of scoring inside the 20. And we saw them, you know, shut the Rams down and hold them down to 13 points. So I like the Falcons in this one. Again, Nick Foles and Philadelphia is their third down conversions. Their third down conversion rate, I think right now, is at 23% since Carson Wentz went down. So that's not good. And you to be able to win at this level, you got to be able to move the sticks on third downs. And if you're not turning over third downs, you're going to wear your defense out. So I like the Falcons in this game. Second game, Tennessee going to New England. As I mentioned, that game is at 8:15 on CBS. The first game, the Falcons, they are at 4:35 on NBC. Brady, and we'll talk about Brady in just a second here, but Brady, you know, in December last month, you know, he struggled a little bit. 6 TDs, 5 interceptions, quarterback rating of 81%. I think that's the lowest it has been in his career. But who am I kidding, man? The Patriots are 9-1 in divisional games at Gillette Stadium. I'm taking the Patriots. Jacksonville going to Pittsburgh, 1 o'clock, 1:05 kick time on CBS. As B mentioned, man, Blake Bortles, 88 rushing yards last week, 87 passing yards. That's not going to get it done against the Steelers. You know, like Ken mentioned, the Steelers are looking for some revenge. They went into Pittsburgh in week 5 and beat the brakes off of Pittsburgh 30-9. Big Ben had 5 interceptions that game. I don't think he'll turn the ball over 5 times. I think this is going to be a close game, though. I like Pittsburgh in that game. And then the final game on Fox, New Orleans visiting the Minnesota Vikings. These two teams matched up earlier this season as well. The Vikings beat the Saints 29-19. That was the first Monday night game of the season, if you remember. But a lot of differences in that game. At that particular time, Sam Bradford was a quarterback. Dalvin Cook was still playing. Hell, Adrian Peterson was still with the Saints at the time. So the Saints had not found their 1-2 punch in Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram at the time. So in that particular game, man, the Saints, you know, the Vikings lit them up for 470 yards. But the Saints defense is playing much better. I like the Vikings in a close one this time. This one probably is going to come down to a field goal. I'm interested to see if Case Keenum can still be the Case Keenum that he's been thus far. But yeah, I like the Vikings at home, and US Bank Stadium will be rocking. So there are our predictions. As I mentioned, man, Tom Brady made the news, made headlines this past week. ESPN published a huge article that shed some light on some dysfunction that's going on in the Patriots front office. Among other things, owner Bob Kraft and Bill Belichick, the head coach, don't see eye to eye or did not see eye to eye with the trading of backup quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo. You know, he was traded to the 49ers. Word on the street and from the article says that Belichick wanted to keep Jimmy Garoppolo. He wanted to keep Jimmy G there, and he wanted Jimmy G to be Tom Brady's successor. Of course, now we all know Bob Kraft loves Tom Brady. He loves Tom Brady's dirty draws. And so he really believes Tom Brady in the fact, and Tom Brady thinks that even at the age of 40, that he can play another 5 years. The article insinuates that Brady had Garoppolo traded. Brady, of course, has refuted that claim. But, you know, Bill Belichick also was, you know, in hot water, if you will, with Brady and Bob Kraft for firing Tom Brady's personal trainer, Alex Guerrero, who used to be on the sidelines and went as far as treating other players and stuff like that. So it's a lot of drama going on. So with all of that going on, the article basically ends up by saying that this is likely to be the last run for these three gentlemen and Brady, Belichick, and Kraft. Now, we know Kraft's not going anywhere, but it seems to suggest that Bill Belichick could possibly be spending his last year in New England. B, do you see a situation where Belichick could possibly step away at the end of this season?
Yeah, especially if they win a Super Bowl, if they mess around and win a Super Bowl this year. I can see Belichick, you know, getting away from the situation on a somewhat good note, winning it all and just leaving out into the sunset. You know, I don't know if Bill Belichick, if he leaves Patriots, will he be retired for good or will he just go to another organization? But yeah, I can see him. I can see Bill. Like I said, especially if they win. If they don't win it, you know, look forward to a lot of offseason NFL drama, because you pretty that's this is going to be like another like a almost LeBron-esque type off drama, you know, you with know what's going on with Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, and Robert Kraft. So, but yeah, I'll just say if they win a Super Bowl, yeah, I think he's going to hang it up. I think he's going to like either retire or leave the organization as a whole.
Okay. FIFO, what about you, man? This is what we've known, man, for the better part of the last 15 years. Brady, Belichick, and Robert Kraft. Could you see this situation bubbling to the point where Belichick is not there next season?
Yeah, it's a wrap. It's a wrap. It was a wrap once they traded Jimmy G, mainly because we know Belichick to be the one coach in NFL history, at least for the time frame that I've been watching the NFL, to take who is that and turn him into a household name.
Mm.
He did that with Tom Brady. I think he was going to do that with Jimmy G. Who's the Malcolm Butler? Like a whole host of guys that they're supposed to not be anything, and he turns them into Super Bowl poised, experienced champions. It's so ridiculously crazy. So here's the thing: I think the key component is Robert Kraft. Obviously, he's not going anywhere, and this is a Kobe Shaq type of situation. He made his choice. Tom Brady will be a Patriot next year. Bill Belichick will be in the NFL next year. He just won't be coaching the New England Patriots. Where he goes, we don't know. But I put it to you like this. If I'm the Browns, I don't care who I just signed. Bill, what do you want? Do you want to be the GM, the president, the part of the owner, head coach, defensive coordinator? What do you want? You can have it. Because there's certain organizations in the NFL that just have not won, and if you bring Bill Belichick on, instant credibility. So that's how. Look, he's arguably the best coach in NFL history.
Mm.
There's no way he's out of the NFL next year, especially if they win the Super Bowl. If they win the Super Bowl, Bill Belichick is going to do everything in his power to show that it wasn't Tom Brady, that it's all him. I think he could take his show on the road. I think that the pressure is going to be on Tom Brady because he's only known Bill Belichick. You don't know nothing else. So how are you going to acclimate yourself to a new situation, a new regime? You're already in at the end of your career. The owner is on your jock. What happens if he brings in another coach and then you look like the seventh round draft pick you once were? What then? You know what I'm saying? What do we make of the Patriots? How much credibility does that give Bill Belichick at that point? So a lot of questions to be asked, and you heard it here first. I don't have no insiders, but I'm typically right when it comes to movement and stuff like that. I told y'all about KD. Bill Belichick is going to be in the NFL, but not coaching for the New England Patriots. It's simple as that. And there's going to any team without a Sean Payton or an established, you know, Pete Carroll, a guy like that. They are going. You better try to go get Bill Belichick, Browns. You better. Or else you're gonna be a crappy franchise for the rest of your sorry days. But with all that being said, I'm interested. I think that alone is gonna at least boost the ratings next year somewhat.
Oh yeah, drama always sells. I'm in total agreement with that. FIFO. Ken, what about you, man? It looks like the evil empire is coming to possibly to an end, man. The Jimmy G trade seems to have blown up in their face. It didn't help the fact that Jimmy Garoppolo went to San Francisco. And I don't know if they lost any games that he started.
Nope.
Wow. So the 49ers clearly look like they have their quarterback of the future and someone to build around. And meanwhile, you know, while the Patriots have, again, a 40-year-old quarterback who is arguably the greatest of all time. He is 40 years old. Father time catches up with everyone. Do you see a situation where we could possibly be looking at next season without Bill Belichick roaming the sidelines for the New England Patriots?
Well, first and foremost, I'd like to thank my Lord and Savior above for allowing this moment to happen. It's been a long time coming. Thank God. I read this story. I was actually about to go to sleep one night, and it broke like late that morning. And I read this thing from start to finish, and I was just all caught up, man. And I ate it up. It was great. It was fantastic. I want to pick up where Ralph with something Ralph said, and to answer the question, I do believe he will be gone. I think I like the Giants scenario that people are throwing out.
Yes, the Giants going back to New York. I would love that for that to happen.
Yeah, I think that's a good fit. I like the Giants, so I would be okay with that if he can come back and turn that into a winning franchise. And New York would definitely give him all of the support that he needs to make sure that happens. But I don't know, mainly because it was something Ralph said, and it's basically like about Tom Brady and his legacy and Bill Belichick and his legacy. How do you want this story to end? How do you want this story told? Because when they separate and we find out the truth, for one, if Brady don't win without Belichick, what does that say about his career outside of the five Super Bowls, right? They're attached to the hip to each other. You know, it's Jordan Pippen. That's basically what they are. He never won one without Pippen, right?
So in this scenario, Ken, who's Jordan, who's Pippen?
Belichick's Jordan.
Agreed. I agree.
And if you're Belichick, you bought yourself some time because you have to turn an organization around. You have to get the quarterback, and you have to turn around the culture so nobody will look for immediate results from you as soon as you take over. They just want to see progress. And you turn around and win one, like you probably would have with Jimmy G, who I like, then all of a sudden that amplifies his side of the story. So is that something that Tom Brady is willing to risk? And I kind of want to lean a little bit towards yes, mainly because it did paint Brady in a negative light, but it's one that we've always known. The man has done a good job of shielding his ego, of crafting this narrative, this persona, this perception of this characterization of him, as he came out and said that today, that, you know, him celebrating Jimmy G's trade was a mischaracterization. No, I think it's probably apropos. I think it's probably accurate. I think there's some level of truth to that. Maybe not 100%, but you probably smiled a little bit. You didn't let the guy in the facility.
Fist bump.
Right. Yeah. You know, I mean, you didn't let the guy in the facility. That's probably documented somewhere. The biggest thing that I pulled from it was the Deflategate. Because there was a paragraph in there that people probably did just skipped over, where it was like Kraft supported him, but there were people in the organization that felt that there was some merit to it. And based on everything else that was in that, and how Brady seems to like things, and how Kraft seems to make sure that he's catered towards, I could see Kraft looking at him as his son. Man, when you have a kid, man, you're going to go all out for your kid, even if you know he did wrong. So I could see him trying to protect the image of Brady and fighting this thing to the, you know, as far as he did, because he loves Brady to death. So that's probably why he took it so personal. So that told me that he probably more than likely, more probable than not, did it. They've ran their course. They have their issues, as all organizations do. And finally, we're starting to see the cracks. And they just need to figure out how they want this story to end.
That's it, man. You made some great points. Actually, all three of you did. I think the only thing I have to add to it, I think they made a mistake with Jimmy Garoppolo. This whole Tom Brady trainer, I mean, that article really shed a lot of light. I didn't realize that, you know, it's one thing. And don't get me wrong, players do have personal trainers, but this Tom Brady's own personal, and I also need to mention that Alex Guerrero is not only Tom Brady's personal trainer, but he's also a business part of Tom Brady's as well. So he had not only, I think, an office in the facility, but he was able to be on the sidelines, you know, during games and stuff. And that never happens. That doesn't happen for anybody on most teams. Because you have the teams have their own medical staffs. And when it gets to a point where if your running back tweaks an ankle and he goes to see Tom Brady's trainer and not the medical staff that is hired by the Patriots, that's a problem. So I think that, you know, him as far as, you know, Belichick getting rid of him, you know, that initial, well, at least was a part of the power struggle, if you will. As I mentioned, you know, Kraft isn't going anywhere. Kraft is on the team for 20, almost 30 years, I think, something like that. He's been a new owner for a while. He's not going anywhere. And I mentioned he loves Tom Brady like a son. So I don't understand how, like, and Ken, you touched on a great point. A coach like Belichick, who is known for getting rid of players, particularly older players, while they still have value. And I'm not saying that, you know, he was going to trade Tom Brady, because I don't think that they, you know, ever had it in their mind to trade Brady. But you don't have a capable backup. And basically what Bob Kraft has said, well, hey, we'll find another we don't have Jimmy G, but we'll find another quarterback in the draft. We'll find Tom Brady's successor in the draft. Look at what's coming out in the draft. There's nobody coming out that you could say, okay, well, hey, you're going to trust the franchise too. And yeah, Brady doesn't get hit. He doesn't, you know, get a lot of injuries and things of that nature, but he's still 40 years old. And even the great Joe Montana got old. Everybody gets old. And, you know, while it sounds great, hey, I'm going to play till I'm 45. At some point, we've seen this. We just saw this with Kobe. At some point, you as an organization have to start making moves and being prepared for life after your superstar. And we saw, you know, and I know basketball is a different sport, but we saw what happened with the Lakers. And New England has to prepare themselves for life without Tom Brady. And Jimmy Garoppolo looks to be, what if Jimmy Garoppolo turns out to be Steve Young? And I know that's, you know, big shoes, but what if he turns out to be that type of quarterback, a bona fide superstar quarterback? We saw what happened in Green Bay. They didn't want to get rid of Brett Favre, but look at what Aaron Rodgers became. You know, I mean, everybody has to get their shot. So I don't know, man. This, I would love to see Bill Belichick in New York with the Giants. I think it's very possible that he might not be back. I mean, he's not going to tip. He's laser focused. They want to try to win another Super Bowl. And I really expect them to come out and kick the crap out of the Titans this weekend, because every time there's controversy, the Patriots tend to play a little bit better. But, you know, there's going to be AFC championship game, you know, in New England, and it's going to be New England versus Pittsburgh, I think. And, you know, we'll see what happens after that. If the Steelers win and send the Patriots home, yeah, I think that could be it for Belichick. I think it really could be the end. So we'll see how this plays out. But ESPN stood behind the story. You know, they didn't have any qualms about putting it out. And, you know, the authors that put it out were very well documented and detailed as far as the sequence of events. So if you have not read it, if you finished listening to this podcast, you know, go to ESPN and check out that article. Very, very deep and detailed article about the dysfunction that is the New England Patriots.
Hey Cal, one real quick thing to add.
Go ahead.
I read something that said Seth said that the Boston writers were tweeting negatively about the article, but sending him DMs saying that he got most of it right. Like, what kind of mess is that?
I found it interesting that a lot of writers, particularly in the Boston area, were looking to, you know, kind of shut down Seth Wickersham, who wrote the article for ESPN. And he's very good, and he's very detailed and very thorough. He doesn't, you know, he's not going off of just something that he heard or something that, you know, hearsay. Everything is very detailed. So I'm not surprised, Ken. I'm not surprised at all. And like I said, we'll see how this plays out. But this could be the last run for Belichick. Brady looks like he's going to stick around. So we'll see how it goes. Moving on to the NBA, man. I don't know how many times we've got on this podcast and talked about LeVar Ball. I thought the last time that we talked about LeVar Ball, that would be the last time that we talked about LeVar Ball. Lo and behold, it is not the last time that we've going to be talking about LeVar Ball. In case you missed it, LaVar Ball is back in the news. LaVar Ball was interviewed by ESPN, and this is what he had to say. As you know, he's been very critical, not as critical as he is right now, but has been critical of Lakers coach Luke Walton, who happens to coach his son, Lonzo Ball. Here's the quote, and I quote, "You can see they're not playing for Luke no more. Luke doesn't have control of the team no more. They don't want to play for him. That's a good team. Nobody wants to play for him. I can see it. No high fives when they come out of the game. People don't know when they're in the game. He's too young. He's too young. He ain't connecting with them no more. You can look at every player. He's not connecting with one player." Close quote. And that was my LaVar Ball impression.
You say it like that too.
So obviously that drew the ire of a lot of people. Now, Luke Walton made fun of it, saying that, you know, he didn't pay attention to what LaVar Ball has to say. But, you know, ESPN was blasted for even interviewing LaVar Ball. Rick Carlisle, Fred Hoiberg, Stan Van Gundy, even Jeff Van Gundy all criticized the network for interviewing LaVar. Not LaVar for what he had to say, but they criticized ESPN for basically giving him a platform. So my question is, you know, as far as the Lakers are concerned, you know, there's a guy at the top of the Laker food chain, a guy by the name of Magic Johnson. Should he get involved? Should he say something? Ken, what's your take on this? Because LaVar has been popping off. We thought with the other Ball boys going to Lithuania to play basketball that we probably wouldn't hear as much from LaVar. But LaVar is still connected to what's going on with his sons overseas and what's going on with this Laker team. And, you know, here he is again popping off, man. What's your take on this?
Man, I honestly don't know, man, because I don't know what it is that they can do. You know, they knew who they were getting in bed with. This is who he is. And they decided to build their franchise around Lonzo Ball. They felt that he was going to be Magic Johnson, like, turn the franchise around, and that they were a strong enough organization to deal with this sort of thing. And as long as outlets like ESPN continues to give him a place to express himself and say this stuff, and they're going to publish it, then he's going to keep saying it. So to me at this point, it's on Lonzo. But Lonzo's not going to say anything. Lonzo can, unless he gets real serious in that locker room. And
you ain't going to say nothing to your daddy.
Right. But he's in a locker room with some grown men.
True.
And men that has families, they try, you know, and all this stuff coming out, man. Kyle, FIFO, B, you guys know at some point you're going to be like, hey, man, what's up with your pops? it's going to happen. It's bound to happen, especially if they felt like he's getting a lot more attention that he deserves, whether they like him or not. And then you start losing games. You can't win a game, too. And then your pops out here talking reckless. Oh, no, somebody's going to check him. And we've seen this happen with D'Angelo Russell. And D'Angelo Russell is, average to above average player? Maybe we can say above average player right now, now that we've seen him in Brooklyn. You know, what happens when Lonzo turns out to be the same? And he doesn't turn out to be that guy. So what's going to happen then is that they're going to ship him off. Admit they made a mistake. If Brandon Ingram continues to blossom, he'll be the guy. Maybe they pick up somebody else. They like Kuzma. Maybe they build around them too. And Lonzo's gone. And then what happens after that is it's not Lonzo's fault he failed. Mm-hmm. It's damn sure isn't LaVar Ball's fault he's failed. It's going to be the Lakers' fault he failed. It's going to be Luke Walton's fault he's failed. Magic Johnson has to stand pat, stand by his coach, and don't do like the high school in Chino Hills.
Yes,
and fire him. He has to prove that he runs that organization and don't cave in to LeVar Ball's loud talk. And that's the only way you can really get him. I mean, you're not going to ever get him to shut up, but it can help by not being bullied, because that's essentially what he's trying to do. He's trying to bully them into making a decision. So that's pretty much all I got, man. It's just crazy, but we're not done. He's just getting started.
That is so true. That is so true. FIFO, what about you, man? It's the Lakers, man. It's the Lakers. It's the lineage. It's Magic Johnson. It's Showtime. It's all of these things. And like Ken said, you know, they knew what they were getting into, but is it time? And I even read a quote right before we came on and started recording. Reggie Miller suggested that Magic should tell LeVar to cool it, if you will. Should Magic say something, or can he do anything at this point?
I think he already did something, and I think anything else would kind of be not necessarily overstepping. It wouldn't be good for PR. And pretty much what Magic controls is the Lakers organization. He doesn't control ESPN. He doesn't control any other platform that wants to give LeVar the stage. And what he did was is he told Laker personnel that we are only interviewing Laker staff members.
Mm-hmm.
LeVar is not a staff member, so we can't interview him. So we stopped doing that. I think that if Magic says something publicly, it makes it look like LeVar does have their ear. And I believe for perception purposes, the Lakers just need to steady the course and maintain. What goes on with the Lakers, LeVar has nothing to do with. You know what I'm saying? When it comes to organizational or anything else. So I think they need to maintain their silence. I don't think they need to address it. Obviously, what Luke Walton is doing, kind of laughing it off. So that's the extent of it. You can't give this any more gasoline. Because if you do, it's not just going to be a fire. You're going to blow something the hell up. And it doesn't need to do that, right? Because already Lonzo is, after LeBron, the most highly scrutinized and publicized rookie that we've ever seen, right? And he struggled, and he's starting to find his way.
Right.
We don't need to add anything else. There's already a mountain of crap that Lonzo has to overcome, because you're 100% right. You know, he's going to have to deal with this in the locker room. You know, certain people may ask him about it. You know, I think Lonzo's just going to play it off. Hey, bro, that's just my dad. He's been like that for forever. Yeah, we know that. You know what I'm saying? So I think it kind of gives him an out. But at the end of the day, the front office of the Lakers organization does not need to address this publicly at all. If they do it behind closed doors, I'm fine with it. But if you do it publicly, then you're saying that where there's smoke, there's truly fire. And you do not want that. You don't want LeVar to be able to infiltrate that infrastructure and then just demolish it and be like, well, they're dumb because they didn't draft all three of my boys. And
he probably would say that too.
But of course, that's what he would say. Like the Lakers can't let that. Like, put it like this: Genie Buzz don't need to be thinking about no LeVar Ball right now. Okay, like that. That's just where it needs to be. But yeah, man, that's what I got on LeVar Ball and the thing. I think we need to talk about his other two boys' debut in Lithuania.
We can hit that. We got time. We can hit that. B, what's your take on it, man? Magic, you know, I don't want to say he's in a crossroads, but I mean, people are looking to him to see what he's going to say or what Lakers as an organization are going to do. What's your take on what Magic should or shouldn't do?
I thought Magic already said they had a sit down behind closed door talk with LeVar, if I'm not mistaken. So
he did.
I mean, it's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting to see LeVar still
popping off.
Huh?
I say he's still popping off.
Yeah, it's interesting to see him still popping off and talking. And to be honest with you, I saw this coming. It was just a matter of time before he was going to start criticizing the coach just because Lonzo was not getting off to a start that he thought he wished he should. It was a matter of time before he was going to start blaming the coach. I mean, that's just what he does. But, I definitely don't think Magic can say anything public. If anything, you know, I don't know how the first talk went the first time. You know, if it wasn't firm or stern talking, I think this next talk behind closed doors should be a lot stern. You know, it should be Lil Firm. You know what I'm saying? It should be like one of those, hey, little nigga, okay, so you said what you had to say. You know, like, I think it should, you know, you should give him that, like, all right, now don't, you know, give him that, raise that eyebrow a little bit. Raise that eyebrow a little bit, Magic, and make your voice a little more stern, man. Like, that, I think if that's the case, that's all I got to say. I think you just got to be a little more firm. I think FIFO and Akin made some good points. But, yeah, I thought they already had this talk. So I think, obviously, Magic need to put this dude to the side. But it's funny, like, seeing all this still makes me think about what Isaiah Thomas used to say when he had his story about his mother. And he's like... You know, this stuff been going on for decades. Right. It's just with the internet and social media, we all seeing it now. So it's just amazing that, like, you know, seeing social media and seeing people, even coaches, you know, you got Stan Van Gundy and Rick Carlisle. Like, mm-hmm. It seems like the coaches are starting to bond and get Lou Walton's back. So it's like how many more coaches going to come out and start, like, voicing their support for the coaches and saying, hey, man, LeVar Ball, this dude need to chill out or whatever. So that's another dynamic that's interesting I want to see play out as the season goes, man. But, yeah, Magic need to give him that raise the eyebrow talk.
Yeah, I agree with everything you guys said. I think when I first heard about the quote, I'm like, the first thing that came to my mind was, like, why is ESPN interviewing this guy? You know, like, I mean, like, we – there's really not much LeVar can tell us that we haven't heard from him. And, you know, I think the Lakers tried to, you know, kind of stop some of that with making their, you know, they came out with some statement about, you know, where players can be interviewed and where people can be interviewed. And it basically was to circumvent the press from going and venturing into the area where LeVar was. So you wouldn't be getting post-game quotes from him. But, I mean, LeVar's got Twitter just like the rest of us. He can tweet something, and that can be news. So it's not like you're going to shut him down or shut him up. We know – and one thing we do know about people with big mouths is that when you try to shut them up, they talk even louder. So you know, I don't expect anybody to shut LeVar up. But what he's saying is not good for business. And I think that's a part of the problem that I have. I know the Lakers were mired in an 8 or 9 game losing streak. They just beat my Hawks the other night. And Lonzo, I saw a little bit of the game. Lonzo played well. He shot the ball well, like FIFO said. And this is a young team. I mean, like, they're still trying to figure out their way. They're hearing these rumors about, you know, what may happen next offseason and things of that nature. So, you know, you don't know where the level of focus is. And one thing we do know about the NBA, it's tough to lose, but it's also even tougher to lose when you're a young team and you're losing, because you don't want that to become, you know, something that you feel like is normal. But yeah, if I'm Magic, we're having one more sit down, and it's behind closed doors, and it's like, look, bro, you got to chill. And I wouldn't necessarily say it in those words, you know, you got to shut up, basically. You know, you can't be out here criticizing the coach, and, you know, because ESPN, Fox, whomever, they're going to run and get a quote from LeVar at any moment. You know, at any given moment, we just never know. So it's going to be up to him. He can, you know, he can talk without being critical. He was very critical of Luke Walton, and Luke Walton can coach. I mean, we saw what he did with Golden State. Now, you might say, okay, well, yeah, it was Golden State, but still, he can coach. And this is a young team, and, you know, I don't buy for a minute that he's lost the team. You know, they're just not good, and they're learning their way, and they're in the Western Conference. If they were in the East, you know, things might be a little bit easier for them, I guess. I don't know. FIFO, you mentioned the Ball Boys. They made their debut earlier today, if I'm not mistaken, in Lithuania. You wanted to talk about that?
Yeah, man, because, you know, I was critical about LeVar and saying that this is definitely not the vision that he had envisioned with all three of his boys making the NBA. But, you know, the thing is that there's certain people in the world that, you know, they cry because they got lemons and other mugs. They just make some lemonade and they sell it for $150 a cup. And LeVar's that guy. And you have to, you know, because I didn't watch the game. I was at work, but I watched highlights. That triple B is all up in through them stands. Right, so it's not just getting his boys out there; he's getting his brand global. And you know what, man? He's always going to be a talking point. I think that we criticize him because obviously he has a big mouth and he's doing that on purpose. But let's not take away, and I think Ken alluded to this, you know, a while ago, a couple of episodes ago, of the genius of LaVar Ball. And we continue to see it, mainly because with people that are destined for greatness, doesn't matter what type of roadblock you put in front of them, they're going to circumvent that, and they're going to maximize their opportunity. And that's exactly what he's doing. And you know what? It's been my experience in life that regardless of how much you plan, that plan is never going to be linear. It's gonna have dips, ups, downs, around some things. And the Thanks. Way LaVar is navigating everything and just turning everything to a positive, you got to give him props. You got to give him props. Man, we're talking about the youngest American-born player to ever play a professional league, a professional game, and he did it in his own signature shoe. These are milestones that LaVar is orchestrating. You know what I'm saying? Like he's making huge, huge moves, and it's we're understating them mainly because LaVar is bigger than everything that he's doing. But when the dust settles, hopefully, when these guys are either in the NBA or once they move on, right? And I'm talking about retirement out of the NBA. We're gonna look back at what he was able to accomplish with his boys, and. We're going to be like, if it wasn't for LaVar, what the Triple B brand did, certain things that we're accustomed to in the future wouldn't be there. Like, LaVar is really setting a lot of groundwork for alternative routes to professional basketball. He's pushing the status quo. He's making things uncomfortable. And to be great, this is something I use at work all the time, to be great, you got to get out of your comfort zone. And the crazy thing is, he looks so comfortable outside the comfort zone. You don't know what's comfortable and what's not. And that is the mark of true greatness, man. And we got to stop talking so much crap and just allow this man to orchestrate what he wants to orchestrate. Because you know what? He's going to make it work. And you can like him or you can disagree with him or whatever. But just know and respect the fact that he's going to make it work.
I think, FIFO, that... I agree. On one hand, I want it to work, right? Because it could really open up different doorways to the NBA. And I think that would be dope to kind of bypass the process. On the other hand, the method, the means, I don't want a bunch of LaVar Ball clones. And a bunch of other black or white men going out here trying to be blowhards, thinking that that's the way. Now, not all of them will have LaVar Ball's gift of gab. You know, he's quick-witted. He has catchphrases after catchphrases. He's charismatic. They're not going to have LaVar Ball's way, but they may have another way. And to see a guy like this become a talking point in a global talking point, because you're right. Like, and I didn't know the Big Baller brand was all throughout that gym. That says a lot. This man is global. They love these kids. And what happens to the Nets dad, whose kids might not be as talented, and he ends up ruining their lives. So I will focus on the positive, the entrepreneurship, the creating a different way to the NBA, but I'm conscious of the unintended consequences that could come from this.
But you know what, Ken? Yeah. I understand where you're coming from, but at the end of the day, when you're not good enough, you're not good enough, and it doesn't matter how much cachet you have, you can't overcome that. The reason why LaVar is where he's at is because his three boys are as good as he advertises them. You know what I'm saying? Think about it now. He doesn't advertise Jello as being the best. He said Lonzo and Melo's going to be the best. And I agree with that assessment, right? So he, in all of the craziness, he is being brutally honest. And if his boys could not play, they wouldn't be where they are. So I understand where you're coming from, where you get the dad with the mediocre kid trying to push down doors and stuff. The only reason why LeVar can do that is because his boys are that good, and they have to back up the pressure that their dad puts on them. When you are mediocre, it don't matter how much pressure your dad put on you, bro. You mediocre. And that's the beauty about sports. The cream rises to the top. Talent is eye-catching. You know it when you see it. Maybe you can't explain it. Maybe you can't put it into words. But when your eye sees it, you know it's something special. Lonzo, I'm not saying he's going to be the greatest point guard of all time, but there's something special in how he passes. He's special. LaMelo is special. I don't think Jello is special, but I think he could be an NBA roster player. But Melo and Lonzo are special. You know it when you see it. Mediocre dad? What's he going to do? He going to talk to his college coach? He's going to talk to his high school coach like LeVar does? How? You have no equity here. Your kid, you lucky your kid getting 10 minutes a game, dog. Go sit your butt down somewhere. Over here hooting and hollering. Matter of fact, take your kid, take him to whatever school you want because he ain't contributing over here. What's the dad going to do there? Oh, well, I'm sorry, coach. What can we do? How can you get my kid back on? LeVar? Oh, man, I'm taking my kid to Lithuania. You mediocre. You ain't doing that. So all of that stuff will work itself out, Ken. I get where you're coming from, but I'm not worried about that aspect, man.
Just to play devil's advocate real quick, FIFO, and something that you just said, it caught my attention. You said about the pressure LeVar putting on him, and I get it. And my only concern, or one of my concerns, one of my main concerns, and I've talked about this before, is not so much about the pressure that he's put on him, but it seems, at least for us on the outside looking in, we're not in the ball household, we don't know what's going on. It looks like he's making it more difficult for him. And as a father, and I would never tell LeVar Ball how to be a father, because I have four of my own that I'm a father for. And Ken, you're a father. B, you and FIFO, you guys are uncles, so you know where I'm coming from in this point. It's our job to make it easier for the children, not necessarily harder. And I think, just again, on the outside looking in, it looks at times as if he's making it harder for them, and I would like to see him make it easier for them. You see what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying, Kyle, but I think at a certain point in time, whether it's you or a situation, a scenario, or we're just where you are in life, you have to rise to a challenge. Right. Like I think early on, you have to make it easy for your kid to succeed. Right. Like you got to put some structure. You got to push them in training. You know, like you got to make that environment for them to prosper easier for them. But at some point in time, to be great, the pressure is required, right? Because if I make it easy for you and you don't have to deal with no pressure, how are you going to handle a game-winning situation?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, experience can teach you, but you need to have other pressures in life. You got to be able to display decision-making in a multitude of facets, not just on the basketball court. You know what I'm saying? So I don't think what LeVar is doing is all the way bad. I think that it can make it a tad more difficult just because of the era we're living in with social media and everything is blown out of proportion. Everything is under a microscope, all of that stuff. You know what I'm saying? All of the extra outside stuff. Mm-hmm. But what LeVar is doing in terms of putting pressure on his boys, I don't think that there's nothing wrong with that because they're grown men now. And where their game is, they need to have pressure. Because pressure is the only way that you're going to burst through a plateau. Mm. So I don't have a problem. I honestly do not have a problem at all.
Okay. Well, no, I feel you on that. I just that's a good point. I just wanted to interject on that. B, you got anything on the balls? Yes. As soon as you said, I was like, ooh.
On the ball, boy.
Oh, man. That is so funny, dude. Like, I swear, as soon as he said it, Ken, I was like, ooh, man, all right. You know, it is sound right, but I know you meant all well.
Do you have anything on the ball, boys? Not on the balls.
Oh, no, I don't have anything on them. No, I don't.
Oh, that's funny. All right. Move on. Before we get out of here, man, we always close out with one got to go. If you're on Twitter, you know about the phenomenon created by my homie Eclectic. You can follow him on Twitter at the number one got to go. Real simple, man. Four things we give out to you. One has to be removed forever and ever from your lifetime. So that's how we do it. And of course, like I said, these are from Eclectic, not from me. We got a couple hip hop guy. Let me see. I got one NBA. Let's start with the NBA. NBA small forwards. One got to go. B, I'll start first with you. Larry Bird, Kevin Durant, Scottie Pippen, or LeBron James. One got to go.
I go with Scottie.
Okay, okay, you're getting Pip up out of here. Okay, okay. FIFO, Chicago native, Larry Bird, Kevin Durant.
Scottie Pippen. He ain't got finished the little Scottie Pippen. He's the one that don't belong, man. All them other guys is getting 30, 40. They doing what they want to do. Pippen, even though he was nice, he was the sidekick. None of them three guys was the sidekick, so Pippen got to go.
Ken, what about you?
Yeah, Scotty.
Yeah.
Scotty too hotter.
Yeah, I don't want to get rid of Scotty, but Scotty got to go. He got to go. You can't touch Bird because Bird was just so cold. And I really feel for people who didn't see Bird in his heyday. Kevin Durant's not going in. And I saw a lot of people getting rid of Kevin Durant. Y'all some low bottom haters. Because Kevin Durant is a beast. And, of course, LeBron probably is going to be one of the greatest players to ever play the game. So, yeah, LeBron goes nowhere. So, yeah, that's my one. I got to go. Let's go hip-hop. FIFO, I'll start with you. MCs, lyrically. Now, we're not talking record sales. We're just talking lyrics. One got to go. Chance the Rapper. French Montana. Wale, Big Sean, one gotta go.
French Montana, man, get that man. And he got some joints now. Look, I mess with French. Got some.
Do you really? You probably be the only person I know that like French Montana.
Wait. Hold on now. Nah, what I mean is that French Montana has some joints.
Okay.
That doesn't mean I'm a fan of him.
Okay.
And I'm not saying he's a great rapper.
Does he bump in the way?
He got some joints that be bumping.
Okay. I'll take your word for it on that. Ken, Chance the Rapper, French Montana, Wale, or the great Big Sean? One got to go.
Can I get rid of two?
Sure. Hey, it's one got to go, but two can go if need be.
Let's go ahead and get rid of French.
Okay. B, don't what about you?
Disrespectful, Ken.
Who you getting rid of?
Came a long way.
French.
Okay, I thought you were gonna say Big Sean.
I wanted to.
Yeah.
Just cause.
Yeah, I'm getting rid of French too. I could actually listen to everybody else on here. Yeah, French. I just can't listen to French. All right. Let's go hip hop. Females lyrically. B, I'll start with you. Remy Ma, Cardi B, Nicki Minaj, or Rhapsody. One gotta go.
Cardi B.
Okay. The newcomer, she's up out of here. Ken, who you got?
Cardi B, easy.
Yeah. Okay.
I
yeah.
Like that, but yeah, she gotta go.
FIFO, what about you? Who goes?
Give me the four again.
Remy Ma, Cardi B,
Ali, shit.
Nicki Minaj, and Rhapsody.
Yeah, I gotta let Cardi B go simply because she's the rookie on the list.
Yeah, I'm getting rid of Cardi B because I don't think she can rap.
but she the hottest artists on that list, though.
Hey, man, hot means nothing to me. Ja Rule was hot.
Man, Ja Rule had joints, though.
He did. Yeah, oh, he... Hey, man, Ja Rule had like a 2 or 3 year run where he ran the charts. But I mean, you know, Ja Rule might be working at a car wash right now.
That's cool. He still got more money than me and you.
This is true. All right, last one. This one a little bit. This one won't be as easy. B, I'll start with you. Discography. Rap groups' discography. So we're not talking lyrics. We're not talking sales. We're talking their discography. Run DMC, A Tribe Called Quest, Outkast, or Wu-Tang, One Gotta Go.
Run DMC.
Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for tuning in to the Hidden Sports Podcast. What's wrong with this guy? Cut his mic. Ken, Run DMC, A Tribe Called Quest, Outkast, or Wu-Tang, who leaves?
Damn, I think I'm gonna have to be with B on this one. Yeah,
I'll be doing this show Outcast. By myself. I'll be doing the show by myself next week.
You're asking for a lot, Kyle.
FIFO, One Guy to Go.
I'm gonna have to go with Tribe.
Wow. You know what, man? I am actually gonna agree with FIFO.
Wow.
And I love Tribe. No, hear me out. And Tribe is like, I think Tribe is probably my third or fourth favorite hip hop group of all time. But if we're talking discography, Tribe's first, in my opinion, Tribe's first three albums are classics. That fourth album, it was all right. Fifth album, Love Movement, just didn't do it. So, yeah. Everybody else, Outkast, Wu, I mean, Run DMC. That's why I'm surprised y'all picked Run DMC, but I'm going to try. That's tough too. That's a tough four.
I don't know, it wasn't a tough one for me.
That's because you're a hater, B.
No, it wasn't tough. Like, once you named them, it was like easy. I ain't even.
I'm messing with you. That's tough for me. I love all four of those groups. It is time for us to close out the podcast. As I mentioned at the top, man, thank you for listening. If you haven't done so already, make sure that you subscribe to our podcast so you can get it. We drop this podcast each and every week. So it's time for our final thoughts. First up is my man, FIFO. FIFO, what you got for your final thought?
Man, look, I'm going to keep it mad simple. I'm going to be a man of few words. You can't trust no Georgia team. Just let it go. I'm done.
All right, Ken, what you got for your final thought?
Yeah, like FIFA, I think mine's will be pretty brief, too. Steph Curry, man. Man, I don't know what's in him, but this dude has been on freaking fire in the last couple of games, lighting everybody up. And I think the league should be very afraid, because my God, and y'all know, Steph, my boy, man, contrary to what people believe that's been listening to the show, Steph is my boy, man. This dude is he's on another level right now, man. So I don't know.
You seen him go for 45 the other night?
Man, dude, he's going for everything. Like, it's nuts.
I know. He on my fantasy basketball squad. Trust me, I know.
Like,
and this is after being off for like a month.
He said he got fresh legs. He said he tortured everybody, man. Be afraid. Be very afraid.
Mm. That's crazy. Yeah, Steph Curry, man, it's unreal. If he plays like this. And I mean, we got a lot of basketball to happen, but Jesus. B, you got your final thought?
No, I don't. But I will say, I'll say this. I'm happy that now we got conference play in the NCAA basketball now. Michigan State got the butts handed to them by Ohio State. But this is what happens when you start to play the in-conference. When you start playing teams, you're going to see 3-4 times in the season. two to three times in a season, it's going to get tough. So now, really, to me, this is the real college basketball season starts now, because now you have pretty much conference play from here all the way up until the tournament starts. So you got the conference tournaments and then the big dance. So I'm excited about that. That's my final thought.
True indeed. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, man. It's always good when conference play starts, because that's when you start separating, you know, the real from the fake. Yep. My final thought, man, there's an old saying back in the day. I used to hear it all the time growing up, particularly here in the South. People would say, you know, give me my flowers while I'm living. And so what that means is, you know, you pay tribute to people while they're still alive and give them a chance to really appreciate it. Not that he may or may not hear this, but I want to pay tribute to somebody that's very near and dear and special to me. This past on January 4th, my head coach from college, Willie Jeffries, turned 81 years old. So I want to send Coach Jeffries a happy birthday shout out. Not only was he my coach, but he coached thousands of other young men. One of the things that stands out when I look at his resume and his history, he was the first black head coach to coach Division I football. So if Willie Jeffries does not coach at Wichita State in 1979, if he does not get the head coaching job at Wichita State, then there's no Willie Taggart. There's no, you know, black head coaches in college football that we've seen over these last 10, 15, 20 years. So he was a pioneer in that, on that level. He came back to black college football. He had previously coached at South Carolina State in the 70s. He had players such as Harry Carson, my uncle, Donnie Shell, Barney Chavis, Edwin Bailey, to go on to the NFL. And then in 1991, he recruited a little wide receiver out of Florence, South Carolina, that was 5'6", 150 pounds, soaking wet, and gave me a full scholarship to South Carolina State. So I am forever indebted to this man, because the athletic scholarship gave me an opportunity to get my college degree in marketing. So, you know, he may not hear this podcast, but Coach Jay, happy birthday. He is a very young 81 years old. This man does not forget a thing. He has the memory of an elephant. He has so many jokes, a funny, funny guy, great coach, a better human being. So Coach Jay, salute to you. Happy 81st birthday. I'm looking forward to seeing you when I come down to the games next year. That's going to do it for us. So for the Dead End Sports crew, for FIFO, for B, for Ken, I'm your host, 12 Kyle. We'll catch you guys next week. Peace.
Sassy Ramsey.
I did not know they called him Sassy.